It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
President Trump came to Washington to be a disruptor, to shake things up. Today, here at the UN, he was true to form.
His ambassador to the United Nations said President Trump would slap the right people in his speech. Boy, did he ever.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself.
On North Korea, the president left no room for interpretation or ambiguity, demanding that Kim Jong-un give up his nuclear program or else.
The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea.
The North Korean delegation, who had a front row seat, walked out before the speech, leaving only a lone note taker. And there was no reaction from the Iranian delegation as President Trump ripped Tehran for seeking to destabilize an entire region.
The Iranian government masks a corrupt dictatorship behind the false guise of a democracy. It has turned a wealthy country with a rich history and culture into an economically depleted rogue state whose chief exports are violence, bloodshed, and chaos.
The president again criticized the Obama administration for the Iran nuclear deal, insisting it is an embarrassment to the United States.
We cannot let a murderous regime continue these destabilizing activities while building dangerous missiles, and we cannot abide by an agreement if it provides cover for the eventual construction of a nuclear program.
Not surprisingly, Iran didn't like that one bit. Foreign Minister Javad Zarif tweeting, quote, Trump's ignorant hate speech belongs in medieval times, not the 21st century. Unworthy of a reply.
Oh, that's the first part of John Roberts' report last night on Fox News. Sandy Rios with you. That's the best report. I think John Roberts, the most, let's say, praising, hinting at actual respect for President Trump as he delivered his speech at the United Nations yesterday. By the way, it was fabulous. It was fabulous. If I could this morning, I would play the entire thing for you. Let me just say, we'll put it on our Facebook page, and would you please listen to it? This is your president, and I think you would be so proud of him. It knocked my socks off, I have to tell you. I was amazed. And in fact, John is not through with his report. He had a very long report on this, and he did a good job, so let's listen to part two.
The president's address brought a sharp reaction from Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, who said in a statement, quote, Trump's bombastic threat to destroy North Korea and his refusal to present any positive pathways forward on the many global challenges we face are severe disappointments. Israel's prime minister, on the other hand, loved it.
I've listened to countless speeches in this hall, but I can say this, none were bolder. None were more courageous and forthright than the one delivered by President Trump today. President Trump rightly called the nuclear deal with Iran, he called it an embarrassment. Well, I couldn't agree with him more.
There was sharp reaction from Venezuela's Maduro regime, which didn't like being called out for imposing a brutal dictatorship.
The problem in Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented, but that socialism has been faithfully implemented.
This return to the cold world. For a moment, we didn't know if we were listening to President Reagan in 1982 or to President Trump in 2017.
President Trump also laid out his vision for the world, urging every nation to follow his America First policy.
As President of the United States, I will always put America first. just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first.
President Trump says it's not his intent to nation build or to impose democracy through military regimes, but through military action, but rather to create global stability by partnering with nations that put the well-being of their citizens first. And a note to the Venezuelan foreign minister, trying to insult the president by likening him to Ronald Reagan, not exactly an insult.
All right, so John Roberts, again, the most respectful report I think I've ever heard him do of President Trump. And I think actually President Trump certainly earned it. I mean, he made you proud to be an American yesterday when he talked to the UN. And again, we're going to put his entire address on our Facebook page so that you can listen to it. But I want to give you a few more excerpts because it's just important. This is how he started his speech. He said, as millions of our citizens continue to suffer the effects of the devastating hurricanes that have struck our country, I want to begin by expressing my appreciation to every leader in this room who has offered assistance and aid. What a gracious beginning. And then he says, and then he sets this up. Fortunately, the United States has done very well since Election Day, last November 8th. The stock market is at an all-time high, a record. Unemployment is at its lowest level in 16 years. And because of our regulatory and other reforms, we have more people working in the United States today than ever before. Companies are moving back, creating job growth, the likes of which our country has not seen in a very long time. All right, I'm going to pause for a second because he's not finished. Because why do you think he's saying all of that? Is he bragging on himself? Well, I'm sure many people thought that. But there is a reason for this, and it's found in the last sentence. And it has just been announced that we will be spending almost $700 billion on our military and defense. Our military will soon be the strongest it has ever been. And that's the purpose in enumerating and reciting to the United Nations body the economic good news for the United States. He's saying to them, look out, we are building our military. It's going to be the strongest it's ever been. And so he says that before he launches in to calling out these various nations. He also lays a kind of a beautiful foundation. We do not expect diverse countries to share the same cultures, traditions, or even systems of government, but we do expect all nations to uphold these two core sovereign duties, to respect the interests of their own people and the rights of every other sovereign nation. This is the beautiful vision of this institution, and this is foundation for cooperation and success. Strong sovereign nations let their people take ownership of the future and control their own destiny. And strong sovereign nations allow individuals to flourish in the fullness of the life intended by God. In America, we do not seek to oppose or impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example for everyone to watch. And then he talks about the anniversary of the Constitution. This timeless document has been the foundation of peace, prosperity, and freedom for the Americans and for countless millions around the globe whose own countries have found inspiration in its respect for human nature, human dignity, and the rule of law. The greatest in the United States Constitution is its first three beautiful words. They are, we, the people. He says that generations of Americans have sacrificed to maintain the promise of these words, the promise of our country and of our great history. In America, the people govern, the people rule, and the people are sovereign. I was elected not to take power, but to give power to the American people where it belongs. Just on and on and on. And then, of course, he said a lot of very pointed things about at least four, actually, regimes. We're going to talk, first of all, we'll just zero in on Iran. You heard a little bit of it in John's report. But let's go for clip seven.
We cannot let a murderous regime continue these destabilizing activities while building dangerous missiles, and we cannot abide by an agreement if it provides cover for the eventual construction of a nuclear program.
He goes on to say that the Iran nuclear deal was an embarrassment, is an embarrassment to us. And he said, and you can believe we'll hear something more about that. So that's interesting because we just talked to Fred Flights, what, 2 days ago? And Fred was talking about, you know, he thinks that President Trump will not sign off. You know, he has to certify that deal every, what, 3 months, 6 months, I'm not sure, but it's coming up in October. And so that he gave notice to the Iranian people. And about Venezuela, pretty amazing. You heard something about what he said, but I want you to hear more of it. This is clip six.
This corrupt regime destroyed a prosperous nation by imposing a failed ideology that has produced poverty and misery everywhere it has been tried. The problem in Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented, but that socialism has been faithfully implemented.
This return to the Cold War. For a moment, we didn't know if we were listening to President Reagan in 1982 or to President Trump in 2017.
Yeah, of course, that's a compliment. That's the Venezuelan foreign minister speaking. But this is what Trump actually said in the text. He says, the socialist dictatorship of Nicolas Maduro has inflicted terrible pain and suffering on the good people of that country. This corrupt regime destroyed a prosperous nation by imposing a failed ideology that has produced poverty and misery everywhere it has been tried. To make matters worse, Maduro has defied his own people, stealing power from their elected representatives to preserve his disastrous rule. The Venezuelan people are starving. The country is collapsing. Their democratic institutions are being destroyed. This situation is completely unacceptable, and we cannot step by and watch. And you just heard him say in that clip, the problem in Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented, but that socialism has been faithfully implemented. From the Soviet Union to Cuba to Venezuela, wherever true socialism or communism has been adopted, it has delivered anguish and devastation and failure. Those who preach the tenets of these discredited ideologies only contribute to the continued suffering of the people who live under these cruel systems. Pam, bam, pow. That's what he needs to say. That's what millennials need to hear. That's what the American people need to be reminded of. It was a tour de force speech. And I would just say that he drew applause, actually, when he said what he did about Iran being a murderous regime. They applauded. The UN, I don't think, ever applauds anyone. If you watch them, they just sit with stone faces, people walking around disrespectfully. It's really an interesting and discouraging place to have to work. John Bolton thought this was the best speech of President Trump's presidency. So that just gives you an idea. But, of course, there were people who didn't think it was so good. I know that's a surprise. But here's what some of the opposition had to say about Donald Trump's speech, clip 9.
If you read the president's words, he said the conditions for totally destroying North Korea would be a force to defend ourselves and our allies. You could read that possibly to even open up a justification for preventive war against North Korea.
That is a potential justification, but the words totally destroying a nation of 25 million people, that borders on the threat of committing a war crime.
Why does he have to be so provocative all the time?
That's why he was
elected.
We're
talking about annihilating millions of people.
Yeah.
This is not baby stuff. This is a guy who was leading The Apprentice as now is talking about nuclear war. I can't take it.
Look, this wasn't a speech. This was a sermon. And he wasn't a president. He was a preacher up there, given his dark worldview about threats and conflict.
That's pretty much what Hillary Clinton said last night. I forgot his name. Whoever it was, the late night host. And she was saying, oh, this is his dark view of the world. Trust me, the world is very dark. What President Trump said is exactly accurate about these regimes, whether it's Syria or North Korea or Iran. He just called them out while they sat there and listened. And God bless him for that. Took a lot of courage. I don't know why it should, but the truth is really an uncommon thing at the UN. That's why Bibi Netanyahu was kind of blown away by what President Trump had to say. Well, all right. So there you go. The gauntlet has been laid down. If you haven't seen the speech, please go to our Facebook page or go somewhere and watch it because it is worth it. It will encourage you. It will encourage you in these dangerous times. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. On the night he was betrayed, Jesus prayed for all those who, in the future, would come to believe in him. He was praying for us. And the primary thing he prayed for was unity. His words were, "That all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you." And this picture of unity Jesus describes is one that comes from being united under him. Sort of like the way instruments in a symphony get in tune before a concert. They don't tune to each other, instead they all tune to a single note so that they are perfectly united to one standard. And for believers, that unifying note is Jesus. Get into God's Word every day with Anchor Devotional. Try it out at getanchor.com.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Michigan's next governor could be a Muslim with ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. I introduce you to Dr. Abdul El-Sayed. One example of who is supporting El-Sayed for governor is Linda Sarsour, who called for jihad against the American government. El-Sayed was also the vice president of the Muslim Students Association, a group with ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, while he was a student at the University of Michigan. We will be discussing this topic and others related to the agenda of Muslim front groups at our upcoming conference entitled The Sword of Truth or the Sword of Islam, scheduled for Friday, October 13 in Fremont, Michigan, or Saturday, October 14 in Grand Rapids. We'll hear from former terrorist, now Christian, Kamal Saleem, along with featured speaker Dr. Norm DeYoung. For more information, go to AmericanDecency.org. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
Joe Kennedy, a football coach in Bremerton, Washington, was punished for taking a knee at the 50-yard line for a post-game prayer. Coach Joe was ordered to stop. He was told he could no longer bow his head or take a knee or do anything that could be perceived as a prayer. When he refused, Coach Joe lost his job. First Liberty Institute took on Coach Joe's case, arguing the coach has a constitutional right to pray. But a federal appeals court says otherwise. The Ninth Circuit Court in California says football coaches are not permitted under the Constitution to engage in public prayer. Catholic coaches are not even allowed to cross themselves. Welcome to the America that was fundamentally transformed by President Obama and his activist judges. It's a nation where football players can take a knee to disrespect the flag, but a coach can't take a knee to pray to the Almighty. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Now, obviously, I mean, we don't want to end up paying for material that we can't use.
Obviously.
And now it might be if, you know, so if there's a certain like consent fee and then something else that represents
the I think definitely a la carte approach would be the best. How we say that, how we frame it, I think is important too. That we're not altering anything, and it's clear that we're not altering anything. Even if the procedure itself, there's a modification in how they do it, it's still the same procedure, but we're doing it in a way that we preserve the integrity of the specimen. I think is something that we can definitely discuss that with Tron.
It sounds like what will probably happen is, you know, we can kind of give you our, you know, our needs and sort of how, you know, in our, according to our budgeting and our, you know, practical use, kind of what, you know, how we look at everything, and then if you guys can kind of translate that, you know, based on your experience, you know, translate it into something that looks good on paper.
Right. I just don't want to turn into a situation that is not financially beneficial for you.
Yeah. And I'll take you up on that. I'll take you up on that. We definitely want to do that because that's what staff and management need to see, that we're not underwriting any project. And I go to great efforts to demonstrate what the actual cost is for us. To whomever asks, and then this is what is budgeted. So they know, okay, yes, you're covering costs. There's margin that's covering overhead or whatever we need to make sure that everything is covered.
Yeah. And so when we're coming in and making it beneficial to you financially, you can frame it so that that's,
yes,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's just a portion of an undercover video. Of course, you heard a lot of these in 2015 when they came out. This was the David Dalyden undercover videos with Planned Parenthood staff. And in that conversation, they're plotting how to profit off of selling baby brains, baby eyes, baby hearts, baby lungs from unborn babies and make a profit without showing it. That's basically what they were talking about. I think the whole certainly Americans were just shocked when they found out that Planned Parenthood was actually going about the business of dissecting, in some cases not telling mothers that they were going to be taking apart their babies, trying to get fresh specimens, all kinds of things. It was just shocking. And I think most of us thought, well, this is so horrible. They were bragging about buying a Lamborghini with one person was bragging about perhaps getting a Lamborghini with the profits, and they were laughing over wine and appetizers about the body parts that they were collecting. It was shocking. We thought, for sure, our Congress will do something. They will defund Planned Parenthood, right? Because millions of dollars go of tax dollars to fund Planned Parenthood. So surely, surely now that they know what they're doing, they'll do something. But they, to my knowledge, have done nothing. And so I've asked this morning Kristen Hawkins, who is the president and founder of Students for Life, which is an organization on hundreds and hundreds of college campuses around the country, who has done probably as much to motivate ex-genners and millennials to the cause of the sanctity of human life as any organization. And Kristen Hawkins is, I guess I would just say this, of all the pro-life groups in the country, and there are many, I can't think of any that I trust anymore in terms of judgment and commitment actually to the cause than Kristen Hawkins. And I've asked her to join us this morning. Kristen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sandy. Thanks for having me on. Those words meant a lot.
Well, I meant it, Kristen. I think you and I are kindred spirits when it comes to actually doing something about this. And sometimes it's amazing to me how people who get into these movements start compromising their positions. And I think it's safe to say that many pro-life organizations that are well-known to our audience virtually did nothing to defund Planned Parenthood. They acted like they did, but they cooperated with Republican leadership to really do nothing. So let's come back to that, because maybe there are things I don't know, and I want to be corrected on it. But I want to talk right now about where you are. You guys are on a what you call a socket to Planned Parenthood truck tour. You started in D.C. at the National Press Club, and you're headed for six states. So what's this all about, Kristen?
Sure. Well, this spring, we became concerned that the Republican leadership that promised to defund Planned Parenthood wasn't moving on Planned Parenthood. It was getting wrapped up in the Obamacare repeal or replace, which, as you know, it's crazy right now in Washington, and there's the usual Washington, D.C. politics happening. And so we asked pro-life grassroots folks from across the country, our 1,100 campus groups, to send us in new or gently used baby socks. The goal was we wanted to create a display, something similar to that horrific display you see at the Holocaust Museum, where you walk in and there's a room full of shoes that they took off of Jewish prisoners before they led them into the concentration camp. And we wanted to find a way to show Congress, to show the American people just the enormity of Planned Parenthood's abortion business. Find a way to show them just how many lives they take every year, 328,348. So pro-lifers across the country started sending us in socks. We had a midpoint rally in Capitol Hill in April, And we took, at that time, we had about 200,000 socks. We took them up to Capitol Hill, which there was the biggest logistical nightmare you've ever seen, trying to get Capitol Police to search an entire U-Haul of 200,000 socks. We got these socks up there, and one of the biggest takeaways I had from the day, not the press or the congressmen or senators that came, but it was the people on the street. When they were watching us carry these socks across Independence Avenue, get over to the Capitol lawn, people from all walks of life were just stopping and asking me, what is this about? Why do you have all of these socks? And I just simply told them, each sock here represents one baby that Planned Parenthood has aborted. And it didn't matter who that person was, if a person, you know, was black, white, young, old, Republican, Democrat. Every single person who walked by when I told them this, their mouths dropped. Their demeanor changed. It was sobering to see an entire truck full of baby socks that represent the dead victims of Planned Parenthood. So we decided once we got these 328,000 socks set, you know, we wanted to go on the road because Congress still hasn't done anything. We reached our goal at the end of July. I went out at the beginning of August. We bought a used truck on Craigslist. We have stuffed that truck to the max. We've wrapped it. And we're launching a tour. We want key senators, we want key voters to see exactly what we're allowing to happen every single day in our country with our taxpayer dollars. And we have a Congress that's pledged to defund Planned Parenthood that still hasn't taken action.
You know, this is the thing that really, and I this is a strong word, but I'm going to use it. It really does repulse me, Kristen. Because having been in D.C. for so long and having seen congressmen and senators go back to their districts and put on their resume and boast that they're pro-life, they're leaders of the pro-life movement, they're pro-life congressmen, and then watch them go back to Washington and actually do nothing that would cost them personally anything, whether it's creds with the Republican leadership, unwilling to fight, unwilling to do anything, but wanting still the moniker of being pro-life is just really more than I can take personally. And they need to be exposed. You guys have targeted six different, this is a bipartisan target, I might add. We know that there are hardly any pro-lifers left in the Democratic Party. Just they're not welcome anymore. And so it's just true, but you're visiting, five of these are Democratic senators. Tell us about why you've targeted them.
Sure. Well, today we're in Pittsburgh. We're going to be holding a rally in front of Senator Casey's office, who at various times in his political career has tried to claim he's somewhat pro-life. So we'll be out here in front of his office. Then we're heading to Columbus. We're going to be in front of Senator Sherrod Brown's office, who makes no mistake about his pro-abortion street cred, but he is from a state that is pro-life and has voted for President Trump, who has, you know, outright promised to sign any legislation defunding Planned Parenthood. We'll be in front of Senator Joe Domey's office in Indianapolis. We'll be in front of Senator McConnell's office in Louisville. He needs a little nudge. And we'll be in front of Senator Manchin's office in West Virginia in Charleston this week. And then we'll wrap up our one-week truck tour in front of the Mega Planned Parenthood clinic back in D.C. on Saturday, and then we're actually dividing up all the socks. We're going to be sending them out to 90 college campuses this fall, going to college campuses, having discussions with, you know, Planned Parenthood's target audience here, key voters, and then we'll come back together with a truck tour on the West Coast, just because the West Coasters always say that they feel left out.
All right, so you're going to change that. Oh, and you can change their hearts and minds, and wouldn't that be something? You know, all right, let me just say it's the national at Sock It to PP tour. Sock It to PP, Planned Parenthood. Sock It to PP tour. And you can find out information at Students for Life if you'd like to help. It's certainly well spent if you decide to help Kristen and Students for Life. Kristen, but let's get exact here, because honestly, since we did that battle on Capitol Hill trying desperately to get this Republican leadership to defund Planned Parenthood when these videos first broke, that David Daleiden's undercover videos, and yep. They'll do it later. I forgot exactly when they were going to do it next, but they promised they would do it next. What has happened? Tell me what has happened.
Absolutely nothing's happened, and David and I are equally frustrated. you know, immediately after the videos came out, the House of Representatives voted to defund Planned Parenthood. And it was a clarion call. It was, you know, this is what we're going to do. And but then we were told, okay, well, I guess we can't, you know, we can't do anything until after November 2016 because, you know, we need a pro-life Senate and we need a pro-life president. And so we fought. We elected a pro-life Senate. We elected a pro-life president. And then December last year, we went to Capitol Hill. We said, okay, this is our number one priority. And the first response we got back from leadership was, well, you know, we have to wait until after 2018 now, guys, because we don't have a filibuster-proof, you know, 60 votes in the Senate. And really, you know, what frustrates me about all of this, Sandy, is that this issue was important enough. If this was an issue about gas prices, they would find a way to make it happen without having 60 votes. I think it's total... You know, it's just total malarkey that we can't get anything done in Washington, D.C. unless your party in control has a House, has a Senate, and has 60 votes in the Senate. I mean, that's almost an impracticability with today's, you know, division and, you know, the partisanship in our country. And I just think it's total crap that they just continue to tell us this and tell us, wait till this election, wait till this election, wait till this election. We want to see results, especially when you're talking about pro-life millennials. They are not patient people. They want to see action. And a lot of these millennials, a lot of students that we work with, for example, they're not Republicans. They wouldn't call themselves politically conservative. It's a very diverse group of people. And, you know, the argument I've made time and time again on the Hill of, if you want to win over this generation of voters, you need to show them that you're going to do what you say and that you're different.
But that's to reiterate. I guess I'm saying this for the third time in this interview. But they go home on their resumes, on their websites. Name I could we'll just call them out: Paul Ryan, Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell. I'm talking about Republican leadership. We're all pro-life. We are the most pro-life caucus. We're all pro-life. But they do nothing. They do nothing, which is seems to be pretty standard fare across the line on all issues. I can actually see what they really believe by what they actually do. I remember I've said this on the air, Kristen, and you'll kind of chuckle at this. I was single for a long time. I have an older sister, and she said to me, Sandy, don't listen to what a man says. Just watch what he does. And she was right. So I've not forgotten that, Kristen. We watch what people do, not what they say, and they're doing nothing. You know, as an aside, there was an article in the Dallas Morning News. I don't know if you saw this, but this clinic out of, I think it's, I'm not sure which city. Oh, it's across Texas. Free abortions for Hurricane Harvey victims.
Yes.
They're giving free abortions through the month of September. It's just, how do you feel? We only have a couple of minutes left. Do you feel like the abortion movement has been emboldened by the inaction of Congress?
I actually think they have. You know, it's interesting. It's not just the inaction of Congress, and it's also the election of President Trump. We've seen, especially on college campuses, a rise in pro-abortion students. I mean, we have 1,100 groups, so we vastly outnumber the other side. But there's been more and more pro-abortion groups started. We've seen a lot of, you know, anytime we're sidewalk chalking or flyers, they come out and they'll throw water at our students or a racist. I mean, just anything they can do to stop the message. It almost borders on ridiculousness of, really, you came out with your water bottle trying to destroy our sidewalk chalk that said pro-love? I mean, and that's what we've come to. It's very divided on campuses right now. They are emboldened. They feel like, you know, this is the time they have to push. And really, they have to. From a grassroots organizing standpoint, this is the time they have to push because they're losing like never before, and they need to go on the offensive. So they're doing what they need to do. We have to stand our ground, and we have to push back harder. We have to fight harder. You know, a lot of people don't want to talk about defunding Planned Parenthood. Getting media for the story has even been difficult. But we're going to be out there. We're going to keep pushing because we're not going to be silent.
Amen to that, Kristen. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Students for Life. And it's at Socket2PP. We'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can reference it in that way. But they're on their Chuck tour. You're going to see stories of them in these six different district offices of senators that are coming up for election in 2018. But it's a question we need to ask each of our senators and congressmen. If you are pro-life, what is it you're actually doing? Show us the money, you know, show us the money. All right, so Kristen Hawkins, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again soon. Good luck on your tour.
But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. The power proclaimed by Jesus here was prescribed for a specific purpose, so his disciples would become his witnesses. The Greek word for witnesses here is martyriesu, where our English word martyr is derived. Jesus has given us the blessing of the indwelling Spirit of God, not merely for personal consumption, but for function. As good as it feels to be filled with God's Spirit, we were filled for function.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Christian apologist Frank Turek.
75% of young people walk away from the church once they leave the home, and one of the major reasons is they don't know why Christianity's true.
Join Frank Turek and others at Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics, October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Witness live debate and the premiere of American Family Association's documentary, The God Who Speaks. Online registration ends October 10th. Visit ses.edu for details.
Are you completely sold out to God? Here's Pastor Jeff Shreve with From His Heart Ministries.
God knows if your heart is wholly devoted to Him or not. Now, wouldn't it be cool and exciting if you had a heart that's passionate, that's in love and on fire for Jesus Christ?
Learn how to give Him your all and gain everything that really matters. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart, weeknights at 6 Central here on American Family Radio.
American Family Radio, impacting lives.
My name is John, and I can't even explain what exploring the Word has meant to me. It's a constant on my drive back home from work every day in a time when it's so easy to not spend time in the Word. That is my constant. That is my time in the Word. With Alex's intellect and Bert's charming wisdom, I gotta tell you, it's just a special time. It's time with the Word, but even more importantly, what sticks out in my mind is when someone calls and has a need, the compassion and the love in their voice, and when they stop and pray for folks, it means the world to me. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Your partnership makes a difference. Join us for our 3-day share-a-thon beginning October 17th. Listener-supported American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affnick with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump's address to the United Nations yesterday was the finest hour of his young presidency. Its leitmotif was an oft-repeated extolling of sovereignty, which he described as not only his duty to champion for America, but also a corrective for what ails the UN. The president spoke the hard truth about the threats posed to the world by rocket man's North Korea, Iran, Cuba, Venezuela, and even Russia in Ukraine, and China in the South China Sea. It could be a Trump doctrine's defining blueprint. Unless, that is, two things now occur. First, will the president be countermanded or otherwise undercut by his own subordinates? And second, will his forceful rhetoric be unaccompanied by the deeds needed to actualize it? The president's past tolerance of such behavior has undermined him and emboldened the adversaries he rightly castigated yesterday. It can't continue. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. That was great talking to Kristen. And if you can help Students for Life in any way, listen, if you get your kids involved. Have them look for chapters on their college campuses or maybe start one. Kristen really is very trustworthy, and their information is great. They do all these very, clever outreaches to millennials and Generation X kids. So I just think it's a great organization. Can't say enough about it. And speaking of life, which is pretty important, you remember that? Remember how God values life so much? I always remember that the first... before the commandments were ever given. And in Genesis 5, can't remember the exact reference number, but it was about the sanctity of life. If you shed innocent blood by man's hand, your life, your blood will be shed. Do not shed innocent blood. And God made that really clear back in Genesis. One of the first things he said, don't you dare do that. And it's, the life is in the blood. And we're not to drink, in the Old Testament, the Old Testament law was not to drink blood. There's something sacred that's the secret sauce, of life. And so God does not believe that you and I have the right to take life. Now, that does not apply to people who have taken life. It's very clear that if you have taken someone's life on your own without due process, if you have murdered, killed, shed innocent blood, you've given up your right to live. And then corporately, a decision has to be made to take your life. So that's very different than innocent, unborn life. I just have to say that. But on the issue of life, I will be speaking at an event on September the 30th that I wanted to tell you about. It's the Lutherans for Life, but of course it's not limited to Lutherans. I'm not a Lutheran. I'll be there. But it's at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church in Springfield, Virginia. And it would be great to have you come. It's from 9 to 1, and there are going to be some great... Molly Hemingway, who you hear almost every night on the special report, will be with us. And Carol Tobias, who is the president of the National Right to Life, who has a great personal story herself, and other people who you will recognize are going to be speaking at that event. So I hope you'll come and join us. And if you'd like to, we'll put this website on our Facebook page so that you can sign up and come and join us. This is a little hard, but it's POPLC, Prince of Peace LC, POPLC.org/Nova. This is really, this is a funny email. This is tough. Nova LFL Conference, Nova Lutherans for Life Conference is what it stands for. So you remember that? Methinks you might have trouble. We'll put it on our Facebook page, but it's POPLC.org/Nova LFL Conference. Anyway, so I hope you come join us. It's September the 30th. Molly Hemingway and Carol Tobias and many others. And we'll be talking about the Reformation, 500 years of life issues. I think it'll be enjoyable. So there you go. So in Alabama, probably one of the most important races of the current cycle is taking place. I read to you just a little excerpt yesterday. I believe this is from Politico, just their daily little offering. And I'm going to read this to you again. Want to know what scares Senate Republicans these days? Senator Roy Moore, the controversial former Alabama Supreme Court chief, has a healthy lead against Luther Strange ahead of the September 26th runoff, making a name for himself by vowing to make McConnell's life miserable if elected. A Moore victory promises to make McConnell's tenuous 52-seat majority even more precarious, allies of the majority leader warn, potentially imperiling tax reform, raising the risk of default on the nation's debt, or even derailing routine Senate business. So John Cornyn, when he asked if he thought Moore would be a productive member of the Republican Congress caucus, said, "I do not." And this is a quote from Lindsey Graham. A win by Moore could embolden conservative insurgents to challenge Senator Jeff Flake and Senator Dean Heller of Nevada and potentially Senators Roger Wicker of Mississippi and Bob Corker of Tennessee. "I hope he makes it," said Lindsey Graham of Strange, "because if there's no place for Luther Strange, then we're all in trouble." So true to form, the McConnell big money pack with Karl Rove has been flooding Alabama with ads attacking Roy Moore. So I thought you might want to hear one, and then I want to tell you about the ad. Here it is.
Whose side are you on? Hillary Clinton's?
"We will not build a wall."
Nancy Pelosi's?
"The Democrats do not support the wall."
Roy Moore's?
"We can't build a wall around our country."
Or are you on the side of Donald Trump?
"The wall's going to get built."
And Luther Strange. AL.com reported, quote, "Senator Luther Strange wants sanctuary cities to pay for border wall," unquote. And President Trump called Luther Strange, quote, "strong on border security." Real Alabama conservatives stand with President Trump, supporting Trump when he needs it most. Big Luther backs our president. Roy Moore, he actually stands with Hillary and Pelosi, questioning whether we need a wall. ask yourself, whose side am I on? It's clear. Roy Moore doesn't have President Trump's back, and our president doesn't support Roy Moore. Senate Leadership Fund paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. www.senateleadershipfund.org.
There they go. Senator McConnell and Karl Rove doing what they really do very well, and that is going into a state with its primary where they have somebody they want, which is Luther Strange. And I'll get into that in just a second. And they don't want Justice Roy Moore because Justice Roy Moore will do what's right. And he will be steadfast and stalwart. And he will oppose them if he needs to. And, man, you can't have that. So you got to produce an ad that PolitiFact says, PolitiFact said, based on that and the clips in the ad, most viewers might reasonably think that means Moore is against a wall. In fact, Moore doesn't want to wait and would rather deploy the American military immediately to secure the border with Mexico. If after that a wall is needed, he said the country should build it. What we have is more of a difference on tactics, not overall strategy or outcomes. The ad makes it sound like the gap is more than that. The ad contains an element of truth, but ignores critical facts that would give a different impression. We rate it mostly false. That's from PolitiFact on this ad. Of course, they're running another ad, too, which I'll get into later. We're going to Justice Moore will be our guest next Monday. That's the day before the primary. And we'll talk to him about this. But it's just amazing. And you have to understand, too, now President Trump is going down to Alabama to campaign for Luther Strange. Wonder who's talked him into that. Well, Vice President Pence is going down to campaign for Luther Strange, too. This is the thing about Vice President Pence that I have often observed. His commitment to the establishment is always unnerving to me. And so they're going to do the establishment's bidding. And remember the establishment, remember when Steve Bannon said that the original sin of the Trump team was to hire establishment people who filled and flooded the offices and now have purged any of the people that were with Donald Trump initially. So there you go. And you have to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves in this day and age and learn. You know, to say that I don't know. I think I would imagine, because I know Justice Moore, he probably, I'm guessing, but I don't know this for sure. I would imagine he would have aligned himself with Ted Cruz in the primary, which many of us did. But I just think, based on what President Trump campaigned on, I think Justice Moore is probably right down the center on all of that stuff. So, and here's another issue that came to my attention from someone. I had no idea. Dr. Susan Berry, who's been our guest several times, she's a professor who writes, she writes for Big Government, and she wrote an expose about how Luther Strange is all about Common Core. And so this is a big issue down in Alabama right now. It's a big issue for all of us, but it's on the forefront, and it's part of this election. Seven members of Betsy DeVos's family have donated heavily to Luther Strange. Now, there's a reason, because Betsy DeVos is all about Common Core. Of course, she says she isn't, remember? And Vice President Pence told us she isn't, but of course she is. It's just, it's this double game that I cannot bear, honestly. So, Luther Strange, according to the research of Dr. Susan Berry, is all about Common Core, while Judge Roy Moore adamantly opposes Common Core, and it is a big battle in Alabama right now. So, that's another issue in that race, but the primary is the next election. It's, I don't know if you call it the primary. This is the second election because they had a primary. Several candidates. Justice Moore, by the way, is ahead of Luther Strange pretty significantly, but they just started these ads that we just played one of them for you. So who knows what that's going to do to people that are not informed. I don't know. They're going to pull out all the stops, you know. Who knows what they're going to say about him? I find myself wondering, you know, what else could they say badly about Justice Moore? People have tried to destroy him so many times in Alabama, and he's taken a hit so many times and survived, and the people there seem to know better. They seem to know Justice Moore better than the people that come from the outside. So we'll see what happens with that. Boy, there's another big story that I'm going to touch on, and we're going to talk about it at greater length tomorrow. And that's this whole business with Paul Manafort, who was with the Trump campaign early on. His door was, the lock was picked, and the FBI came in unannounced, took pictures of his suits, went through his private information, invaded his home. And now we find out that he was wiretapped. And Paul Manafort had either an apartment, I believe an apartment in Trump Tower. And remember when Donald Trump said that he was being wiretapped? And everybody thought that was just ridiculous? Well, it turns out it was absolutely true. We don't know whether Donald Trump himself was wiretapped yet, but we know Paul Manafort was. James Rosen has a great report on this. Let's listen.
It was the mother of all tweets when President Trump declared early on March 4th, "Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory." Within days, former and current officials appeared to refute the claim.
There was no such wiretap activity mounted against the president-elect at the time, or as a candidate, or against his campaign.
I have no information that supports those tweets. That the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components.
Many in the news media pronounced the president mistaken or worse.
It's just a falsity, and we just need to call it that.
It's an administration that has lost all credibility at this point.
The president promised additional disclosures.
I think you're going to find some very interesting items coming to the forefront over the next 2 weeks.
In fact, several months would pass before Obama-era National Security Advisor Susan Rice confirmed to House investigators that she unmasked the names of Trump campaign associates from classified intercept data in which those names had appeared in coded form, a form of surveillance in which the investigators believe other Obama aides participated.
The CNN exclusive breaking at this moment.
Now CNN reports Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort was under federal wiretap from sometime in 2016 into early this year, a period when, as CNN states, Manafort was known to talk to President Trump. The Justice Department isn't commenting, but in litigation against the government watchdog group American Oversight, DOJ recently reaffirmed it has no records to support the Trump tweets, but DOJ also said it can neither confirm nor deny the existence or non-existence of records relating to wiretaps of campaign associates.
So if, in fact, Mr. Trump was in touch with Mr. Manafort, who was under a FISA investigation, and he could have been picked up, but that is a far cry from Mr. Trump's own tweets saying that President Obama was tapping his phones.
The president has argued his tweet shouldn't be so narrowly construed.
Because wiretapping is pretty old-fashioned stuff, but that really covers surveillance and many other things.
So it's now possible that the president, while he was not the target of a wiretap by his predecessor, was wiretapped by the Obama administration through telephonic surveillance of his associate, which, if true, would place Mr. Trump closer to a measure of vindication than he was, say, last week.
All right, that's James Rosen on Fox, and this is really an incredible story, so incredible that as I said, we're going to talk about this at length tomorrow. But here are the questions that I would just raise. Did James Comey then, when he testified before Congress, lie about these wiretaps of Trump Tower? We're going to play that interaction where he's asked the question and get his answer. Then James Clapper, who came out, the former DIA, publicly saying there's no truth to that. There, you know, I think he was still, I believe this is before the election when he was still in position. So did they lie? And if so, is there going to be any, if they did lie, would there be any punishment for that? And what about Paul Manafort? Have his rights been violated? By the way, he's insisting that the DOJ release any communications, make it public. He says there's nothing there. Whatever wiretaps, whatever conversations, release them then, for heaven's sake. And show to the world that I'm not guilty. Now, I don't know if he is or not, but that's what he's saying. So you can see. There is abuse of power going on here, I think. By the way, Bob Mueller just hired the 17th left-wing lawyer on the so-called probe between the collusion between Trump and Russia. These are amazing times. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.